The power of a business and personal network should never be discounted. The risk of anything being single-threaded should never be ignored. And no one should underestimate the resilience of an individual or an organization. That's part of the story you're going to hear about today with our guest, Mitch Weintraub of Cordia Partners. Chances are, if you're doing business in Northern Virginia, you already know Mitch and his partners and their team. And that's because they've built a really strong network, brand, and a solution set for businesses here. Their business touches on nearly every area of people, process, and technology in the finance and accounting space, and even more. In this episode, Mitch is going to share his story, but also his advice as to why now is the time that other businesses should be leaning in.
You're listening to the Northern Virginia Business Podcast. My name is Jessica Dubois.
And I'm Derek Wynn. Here, we chronicle the stories of successful business owners and executives who stand out from the crowd.
Whether you're driven by purpose or profit, tune in to learn how these leaders have built successful businesses,
helping to shape the landscape of Northern Virginia. Welcome, Mitch. How are you today?
Oh, doing great, guys. Happy Monday.
Happy Monday, and thank you for coming on the Northern Virginia Business Podcast. You know, Mitch, we've been really excited to have you on, and I wanted to start with maybe an early but pivotal moment in your life. I've read about it, we've talked about it, but I want you to talk about kind of your mindset of failure is not an option, and tell us kind of that story, if you could, of kind of maybe where that started.
Yeah, Derek, that is a great place to start, and a true pivotal moment in my life occurred really early on. I was probably 18 or 19, freshman at University of Maryland, really starting my college career. And there was an instance that, you know, ultimately really taught me several critical lessons that are really the fabric of who I am today. So the story, you know, unfortunately, I was brought up, we were fairly comfortable, and my dad had a fabulous job as a sales manager for a Fortune 500 company, and things were going absolutely great. And as a, you know, 18-year-old, you're in college, you think you're invincible, your folks are fine, they've got the means, they have the resources, and everything is wonderful. 2 weeks into my freshman year, I got a call, and this is clearly before texts and emails, but I got a call that my dad lost his job, and all that comfort that I had growing up was getting ready to change. You know, it's at that point, no severance. There were limited savings, you know, trying to put me through college. My younger brother was right behind me. You know, I didn't know what it meant to cash out a retirement plan and cash out an insurance policy because of limited savings. This is going to lead into my failure is not an option comment in a minute. But as I mentioned, no severance. There was no way to predict how tough things would get for my family. You know, again, me being away at college, I was insulated a little bit by it, but, you know, didn't realize that it would really blow apart my family and put us in a pretty bad place. I did learn from this that my dad did not have a robust business network. He didn't have a mentor to speak to or to help him. I know he tried to hide it for a while from my mom and others, and got deeper into debt and ultimately into some you know, troubled times. What did it do? This forced me to work several jobs, ensure that I had money for college. You know, I knew then that I needed to be accountable for myself and do whatever it took to survive. Again, the failure is not an option. You know, during this these uncomfortable times, he didn't ask for help until it was too late. It took several years for him to claw his way out of it, but fortunately, he and my mom were able to do so. And it was probably midway through my junior year that things ultimately got better and they got back on their feet. But, you know, at the end of the day, it was ironic through this hardship, you know, that these lessons came out of it that have become so important to me personally and professionally. You know, the failure is not an option. You know, I saw my dad fail, and I saw him attempt to hide, and I saw him with this defeatist attitude, you know, kind of this hunkering down, and if I hide, maybe it'll go away. And it wasn't this I'm going to lean in, and we'll talk about that later on. I'm going to lean in and deal with it and grow and fight, punch, and kick my way out of it. He didn't have that. And again, that just sits so, you know, it sits with me today that's something that I always need to do. It's, you know, the failure is not an option. I always have to be proactive. Don't single thread. Don't put all your eggs in one basket. I saw him do that. And that's, you know, really what's so important to me today. And when I started the company, you know, and frankly, throughout my entire career, you know, you just can't put yourself in a position where you have one major customer, where you have one key employee who's doing all the work, where you have just one plan or one course of action. You always have to have the backup plan or plan B in your back pocket just in case you needed it. And he didn't have that, which was unfortunate. Surrounding yourself with mentors you can trust and a network that could help you personally and professionally. You know, I realized today and over the years that he didn't have that. Had he had close mentors that he could trust, he could have spoken to them. Had he had a robust business network, it could have probably enabled him to get a new job a heck of a lot more efficiently, but he didn't have that. And that, you know, that really put me in a position to surround myself with great people, having an extensive network, and it's really proven fruitful over the years. And finally, address problems head on and communicate. You know, I clearly learned that, and that's been, you know, really a cornerstone to my career and my business at Cordia. It's surrounding ourselves with great people. It's talking. It's not hiding from problems. And when we have an issue, we talk as partners, we talk with peers, and we get things resolved. So it's addressing those problems head on and communicate.
When did you realize that you wanted to do things differently or that you could do things differently? Watching your parents go through some of these difficult times, you know, while you're watching it, are you thinking, man, I would really do things differently and I want to in the future? Or was it later on as you got into your professional career?
No, that's a great question. And it was immediate. You know, it was, you know, you go to college and you think everything's great. And then, you know, all of a sudden it's dad's out of a job. We paid for tuition for this semester and you're going to have to help out here because we're trying to keep our house. So out of necessity, absolutely. It was one of those moments that like if I don't do something or take control, bad things are going to happen. So it was this wake up call at 18 years old. I think it was 18 or not. I can't remember anymore. But it was this wake up call that hit where if I don't take control and if I just want to fail, you know, I can acquiesce and fail and drop out of school going into my second semester and, you know, figure out what to do next. But no, it was an immediate knee-jerk reaction that I have got to do something right now or things aren't going to get any better. So no, it was right there and it's been rooted in who I am, you know, all through my career to today and what I try to teach, you know, others.
Well, Mitch, if you can, you know, take us from, let's say, graduation, right? So you make it through college, you know, graduate, you pass out, and then where do you go from there and how do you end up to where you are today? Take us through just kind of a quick history there.
Yeah, Derek, good question. You know, I graduated University of Maryland with a BS in accounting. And back then you graduate with accounting, you get an audit and tax, and that's what you were supposed to do. You get your CPA. So I did early in my career. I started on the compliance side doing audit at a small local firm in Maryland. And, you know, really learned about businesses, learned about compliance, learned about auditing, learned about tax, kind of got my arms around what makes a company tick on the, you know, in the finance and accounting area. And I really enjoyed it. So, you know, so from graduating college, getting the accounting degree, working on the traditional side of public accounting, you know, really learning and, you know, and growing was really the key. And what ultimately got me to where I am today in the outsourcing, consulting, recruiting, and staffing space, it was really around the premise that, gosh, you know, I audited. We looked back and helped companies with tax work, with audit work, with compliance work. But I was really motivated to help companies improve What can we do to ensure that their people, their processes, their technology was as robust as it possibly could to enable the business owners or the boards of directors in the not-for-profit space, you know, really take their organizations to the next level. So, you know, growing up, you know, accounting is typically looking backwards. You had to master that, but I really wanted to be in a position where I could help my clients and companies look forward. And frankly, that looking forward is really what led to Cordia, what really led to me shifting from looking back to looking forward and really helping companies improve their back office, their finance and accounting infrastructure.
So kind of going back and pulling all of this together, I mean, you come out of college in this experience and you say, okay, look, it's not so much failure is not an option, but also maybe it's kind of like the whole eggs in one basket kind of thing, so on and so forth. You know, what prompted you to say, look, I'm going to, you know, leave working for someone and starting a company? Like, to walk through that mindset shift, if you could, a little bit. Was it that you saw the opportunity? Was it that you saw, you know, all of these different things? Or is there something else that drove that?
Yeah, that's a great question. So I spent a good 6 years at Beers & Cutler, a Northern Virginia-based CPA firm. And there, I was partner in charge of their outsourcing practice. So this is after I transitioned from the traditional tax and audit that I described earlier. So at Beers & Cutler, now Baker Tilly International, I effectively led the outsourcing practice. And it was all about what I just described. It was helping companies with their people, with their processes, with their technology, to enable them to really support their operations better. You know, myself and my team was very, very good at those, you know, at those pillars. Again, the people, the process, the technology in the finance and the accounting area. So we had a great practice area going. And if you recall, back in that time frame, Sarbanes-Oxley hit, and that really put traditional accounting firms in a position to look at the services that they're offering, and are any of the services conflicting, and do or should those services fit with a traditional CPA firm? So at that time, collectively, the decision was it was time to move the practice out. And in 2006, I was fortunate enough to move the entire practice out. The folks at Beers & Cutler, again, now Baker Tilly, were very, very helpful in enabling that to happen. And in April of 2006, we effectively started our business as Cordia. We left with probably 8 employees and less than $1 million in revenue. And today we are sitting right around 200 W-2 employees. And in 2019, we finished just about $30 million in revenue. So, you know, that was it was an incredible journey to transition out of one of the most respected local/regional firms in the Northern Virginia area, spin it out, and basically start our own business. Again, we were fortunate because we were able to bring our key employees. The firm was gracious enough to enable us to take our clients with us. So it really teed us up for success from day one. It wasn't a situation where it's, oh my gosh, we're starting a new business and we've got nothing. We were fortunate that we had a good core group of people, a good core group of clients, and we were able to move forward. Still a bit scary going home to my wife and telling her that, you know, we're going to take all of our life savings and we're going to put it into our, you know, into the new company. Yes, it was my dream to ultimately have my own company, but to go home and say, you know, to say that it's time. 2 kids at the time, young, you know, we're going to take all of our life savings and we don't have a backstop from a big Northern Virginia-based firm behind us. So it was scary, but it was also the best thing that we could have ever done. But again, being truly fortunate that we were able to bring great people and a good client base to start with.
Mitch, I'm trying to imagine you all with 8 employees just getting started out, because Anyone that works with Cordia knows what I'm talking about when I say the Cordia placemat of services. And this thing is extensive. Like, you all really can help a company with almost any part of their operations or their internal processes. Can you tell me about how that's evolved? Like, looking at where you were with 8 employees, mm-hmm. how has the mindset or the approach been with adding more and more services to what you offer, you know, as your portfolio to the clients that you work with?
Yeah. So, you know, it's all about helping and it's all about solving problems. And when we started off, it was purely just outsourced accounting. We would get the call if a client lost their controller, if they were starting a new business, and they just didn't want to build it themselves. They weren't able to get and keep great accountants. They weren't able to set up their systems properly. So it started off just doing outsourced accounting, where a company would come to us, or we were referred into a company by a center of influence to take over all or parts of an accounting department cost effectively, predictable costs. And it was really just, you know, really just set up to solve problems that companies have in the accounting space. And that's it. And as we started growing, we said, gosh, you know, it'd be great to build out, you called it the placemat, but it's our service offering. We thought it made sense to build out our recruiting and staffing practice. So we brought great folks in. One of my partners, Joe Greaves, he elected to run that particular area. But we really wanted to position ourselves whereby if a company wasn't ready to outsource, that we would have the best recruiting and staffing team out there that could backfill positions and solve problems. The big difference between recruiting and staffing and outsourcing, Cordia manages the work product. And in recruiting and staffing, the client or customer ultimately manages those folks. So we built out recruiting and staffing to help solve other client problems. The other thing that came with it in this area and many areas around the nation, getting and keeping great accountants is really, really hard. It's really hard to recruit great accountants. So very early on, we decided to have what started off as our external recruiting arm start recruiting for our internal outsourcing and consulting teams. And that proved to be brilliant. So we effectively have a recruiting arm that's outward facing, solving customer problems, but they also help staff and exclusively staff all of our internal recruiting needs. And we effectively pay the folks that are doing that fair value for searches. So it's kind of like this self-priming pump where if our outsourcing team or consulting team needs staffing, the recruiting and staffing arm effectively places those folks. So that was the second key piece to the placemat. The third piece is consulting. We've quickly become one of the top consulting firms in the region. We're a significant technology shop. We're one of the top Deltek, Costpoint, and Uninet systems implementation organizations in the area. We're also a fairly significant Sage Intacct partner, and frankly, that's on a national scale. We're one of the top Sage Intacct partners in the nation, let alone the region. And most recently, we added Cordia Technical Accounting. And this is an effort to solve companies' complex technical accounting needs where their traditional audit firm may be conflicted out. So we're able to address complex accounting issues such as revenue recognition or M&A or deal support that the traditional CPA firm might be conflicted out. So it was a great question, and it was really building out these service offerings to address what our clients are looking for. And I said it earlier, but I can't stress enough, any accounting department from a startup organization to a Fortune 100 company deals with people, process, and technology issues. And that platform that we built, we believe, addresses most of them.
When the evolution of Cordia really is a success story, but you didn't know that this was, you know, going to be where the path led you in the beginning. And I'm thinking back, like you mentioned that the conversation with your wife, you know, about branching off, putting in your savings, and starting out at 8 employees, you know, having that conversation with your wife and your family. I'm also trying to connect this with your childhood and seeing your parents and their struggles with business. Mm-hmm. Did you have some flashbacks to this? Like, how did you make sure that you didn't go through the same difficulties that your parents did when you're going into your own business?
Yeah, I think it's part of those lessons learned and what I mentioned about what's in my fabric today. You know, it's having that brutal, brutal focus on, I can't fail, I won't fail, and somehow convincing my wife that I'm good for my word, good by my word. I think those characteristics ultimately made her feel a heck of a lot better that if we do this, we are going to be successful. There are many people in Northern Virginia and this region that want to see me and my partners and my company successful. I also mentioned it was a wonderful, wonderful transition out of Beers and Cutler, now Baker Tilly. The partners over there did everything in their power to help refer business to us. You know, I mentioned having a great network and mentors. You know, this wasn't done in a vacuum. You know, when we spun it out, my partners, Mark and Joe, we were all in this together. And we looked at each other and we said, we're going to build something pretty cool here and we are not going to fail. And having that, you know, robust business network and, you know, knowing the folks in the insurance business like yourself and accounting firms and HR consultants and technology consultants and attorneys and bankers, investment advisors, when we went out and told these folks that we were doing this, they came back and said, how can we help? You know, having all of that at the end of the day, you know, really was the key to our success. Knowing that I and we had a network that wasn't going to let us fail, that was going to introduce opportunities to us, provided we did and do a good job. But that was really the key. But no, there was never a, oh my gosh, what am I getting myself into? And am I going to screw something up? No, there was never, that thought never crossed my mind. Not at all.
Mitch, what's your advice for business owners as far as finding those people? So let's say I'm a business owner and, you know, I know plenty of peers in my industry, but of course my peers aren't going to necessarily, you know, send business my way in most cases. But how do you go about the process of finding those people? Like, from someone who's been successful in that, what is your advice to another business owner?
Yeah, I think at the end of the day, it's just building trusting relationships. And, you know, it's the trusting relationships, it's build personal relationships in addition to the business relationships. Every opportunity you have to refer something to them further enhances the opportunity of them referring to you. But it's also playing where they play. And it gets down to aligning yourselves with others that really share your core philosophy and your core values. I am very, very, and you may have a question that drives here later on, but I have been very, very active in the community. I'm past chair of the Northern Virginia Chamber of Commerce, but I've been a member of the chamber since, gosh, 1999. And I've built relationships there with bankers, with the CPA firms, with the insurance folks, with the technology folks, as I mentioned earlier. But it's, you know, it's growing and nurturing relationships with like-minded people, frankly, in a like-minded community. And, you know, if you liaise and collaborate with those folks outside of the work environment in a volunteer type of setting, it further builds that connectivity, that trusting connectivity that's second to none. So there is no secret sauce. This isn't a cold calling situation. This is true friendships. This is helping each other out. This is making a referral source look really, really good if you refer them or if they refer you, you know, to a point where, you know, I thank a referral source for sending me work, but it's even more important when that client goes back to the referral source initially and say, thanks for introducing Cordia. Thanks for introducing Mitch. Thanks for having Cordia help with the search because they did a great job. That's at the end of the day what it's all about.
Yeah, I think you're right. I mean, I personally think that, you know, more often than not, the people you tend to do the most with, whether it's clients, other businesses, et cetera, they're people that start to look and feel and act just like you, right? I mean, it's the whole vibe attracts your tribe. So I think that's spot on. You know, take a step back for a second too, because, you know, we're talking a lot about planning here and the plan you had from day one. Talk to us about maybe some of the curveballs that, you know, things have come your way over time. You know, you start the business 2 years later, we're in a recession. What was that like? Take us through that if you could.
Yeah, call it a curveball, call it a seismic shift. But yeah, you're absolutely right. We started in 06. You know, you have a good core group of clients. You have 8 key people. And a couple years later, you have a recession. And back then, everyone said, what are you going to do to cut? What are you going to do to cut? What are you going to do to cut? And what are you going to do to hunker down? But even back then, the failure is not an option, and the leaning in, you know, concept, and I know we'll get into that in a little bit, you know, that really put us in a position to put the pedal down and charge through it. You know, during a recession, you know, what happens? Folks are looking at, how do we reduce costs? How do we better manage our accounting function? During a recession, maybe I'm not getting timely, accurate cash flow forecasting from my accounting team. That's a prime opportunity for their attorney or one of their advisors to pick up the phone and call us and say, we've got a client who needs to cut costs, who can't get timely, accurate cash forecasting, budgeting, or reporting. Maybe they're not billing their customers within 30 days. Maybe it's 45 to 60 days, and that's not acceptable. Cordia, can you help? So, you know, long story, you know, short, Derek, it's, you know, we weren't impacted by it. We came out fighting. But yeah, there were times going in where we heard from outliers saying, you got to cut, you got to cut, you got to cut. And even back then, we said, no, we need to lean in and we need to figure out how to let every accounting firm we know we work with, let every banker we know with that we work with, let them know that we've got the ability to help their clients get through this. And we did. You know, a few years later, you had the government shutdown. You know, same situation. About half of our business is in the GovCon space. So we said, gosh, you know, what are we going to do here? You know, with the shutdown, that's clearly going to impact our business. But at the end of the day, every company needs accounting and every company needs to process payroll and pay their vendors and bill their customers, close their books, reconcile their accounts, prepare financial statements that are provided to banks. So it's critical work that needs to get done. And during these, you know, these critical times, you know, Cordia came out like a champ here. And again, it's, you know, it goes back to the failure, not an option. It goes back to the single thread. You know, we weren't single threaded by just having an outsourcing practice. We added those other business divisions that we went through earlier, which enabled us to solve problems. And then a few months ago, COVID hit, and exact same situation. We could have, as a firm, we could have very easily said, all right, there's uncertainty. Let's stop hiring. Let's reduce costs. Let's figure out how to cut our way to prosperity. We could have very easily hunkered down and played that strategy, but we didn't. We've probably hired 7 or 8 net new people since the pandemic. We're adding people. We've added clients. This past week, we've added 3, possibly 4 new clients. We have quarterly bonuses. We paid Q1 bonuses to our staff. I believe we paid on or about April 30. So that was in the middle of, right in the middle of stay at home. And where other companies were cutting people, we picked up the phone and called our staff from top to bottom and told them that they were being given performance bonuses for the first quarter. Put yourself in that position when folks might be thinking that they're going to be laid off or their peers or friends have been furloughed, and we're paying bonuses because we care so deeply about our people. And it was so important for us to, you know, to keep these folks chugging along and fighting the fight. So again, just so key to our business and our people and serving our clients.
Yeah, I think that's a great point. I mean, you think about it, you know, you learned a lot probably in 2008. You learned more in 2012. I mean, this is great advice for anyone who's been in business for less than 10 years, right? I mean, it's just, it is what it is. And I think that with COVID, I think we need to keep thinking that way. You know, the hard part for a lot of businesses right now is, you know, what does the future look like? So do you want to give us, again, kind of to flesh that out a little bit more insight as far as what you're doing as a business in response to COVID?
Sure. So, you know, I hate to say what we're doing in response to COVID. I think it's what we're doing to ensure growth, not in response to COVID. What are we doing to ensure growth? What are we doing to ensure that our customers, our clients' needs are met? What are we doing to ensure that we as a firm, that Cordia is positioned better than anyone else, better than our competitors coming out of this? So a few examples, and hopefully you or folks that listen to this podcast have heard us advertise on WTOP Radio or iHeartRadio, or have participated in one of our economic outlooks or one of our webinars. During this time, you know, many organizations have slashed their marketing and advertising budgets. We actually invested more. And it's this lean in methodology that if we invest today and we put it out there to the region that we are open for business, we have flexible labor, we have flexible workforce that can meet your needs right now when you may need it the most. We believe that pressing the accelerator a little bit more now, hiring new people, advertising, paying bonuses will inherently put us in a better position coming out of it. So we don't have to be put in a catch-up situation. My gosh, our competitors are now advertising. Our competitors who froze hiring in the past are now trying to replenish their staff for the fall, you know, hoping that the fall or, you know, Q3, Q4 will turn around. But myself, my partners, you know, it's a little different mindset that let's invest now and do whatever we can to be best positioned. So you talk about advice to other business owners. Again, you can hunker down and you can try to cut your or save your way to prosperity. I'm not sure that myself, my partners and the folks that we have in our organization really follow that principle. Again, deeply believe that if we work hard and position ourselves stronger, that we will come out of this and we will just continue to accelerate.
Well, and Cordia has been setting themselves up to be successful in a time like this, I think, for the last few years, because you're looking at the brand refresh. So I know you guys recently redid like your logo and your colors, your office, some culture side, but also the way that you are viewed from the outside. And also I'm thinking about all the events that I know that you've sponsored, the boards that you are on and your leadership is on. And I'm wondering, where is this line between marketing, business development, and even reputation? Like, what's your perspective on this?
Yeah. So a couple years back, a little bit over 2 years back, we finally made a decision to invest in world-class marketing communications resources. You know, we, in the past, we attempted to bootstrap it and do it ourselves. If I had a redo, I would have probably invested in a robust marketing communications outreach group years earlier, because that brand refresh that you described, our campaigns have really, you know, really accelerated our growth. But marketing and business development at the end of the day is only as good as your delivery. You know, I believe, my partners believe, that we're good because we do what we say we're going to do at the price we say we're going to do it, with the right professionals doing that job, you know, really delivering and solving their problems. If we don't provide solutions, you know, we could spend millions of dollars on marketing and advertising and business development, and it's all for naught. If we don't solve complex business problems for our clients and create this this trusting relationship with the referral sources that send us the work, you know, then it's all a waste. But, you know, this goes back to the leaning in methodology. You know, we firmly believe that a company like ours, the more people we let know what we do and how we do it, the more likely we're going to get the call when something happens. At our clients, what typically drives us getting a call? If there's turnover, if a CFO or controller leaves, if a company can't get ready for audit, if a company is involved in a M&A transaction and they need help with due diligence, so staff turnover, underutilized systems or systems that aren't optimized, or any sort of problem or discomfort in the finance function, the more people we let know through attending meetings and webinars and networking events, the more time we have in front of people building out these trusting relationships, the greater the likelihood that we will get a call, we will get an email that XYZ company or not-for-profit needs some help. And then it's up to the delivery team to deliver. Again, the worst possible thing that could happen is we get a referral and the team doesn't deliver. And then that breaks that trusting link with the group that referred us into it. Does that answer the question?
Yeah, totally. I think the big thing we kind of come back to in this too is, you know, a lot of the things you're mentioning, it's like, okay, this can only happen in Northern Virginia because it's a land of government contractors with, you know, all the different things that circle here. I'm not going to go into those. But why do you think Northern Virginia is just such a great place for business?
You know, it's interesting. And, you know, I was driving back from my beach home this morning and I was trying to really get my arms around that question. Yeah, Northern Virginia is great. We've got the government contracting community. We've got the not-for-profit community. There's great people here, you know. But at the end of the day, you know, I really believe that one of the key reasons why our region will continue to be successful is this kind of this unique connection between incredible business leaders and philanthropic efforts. I jotted down a list of some folks that are close to me that have mentored me directly. And all of these folks are key business leaders and deeply, deeply tied to the community. It's the Todd Stottlemyres, General Carl McNair, Phil Panzarella, who is a West Point grad and now Chief Operating Officer at Easter Seals, Dick Duvall, Rich LaFleur at Grant Thornton, and all the work that he does with Junior Achievement, and Kevin Reynolds and James Dyke, Harry Claff, Teresa Carlson. These are business leaders who are fixtures at their respective companies and industries. And, you know, they've all won awards, from the Chamber and the Community Foundation. But all of these folks are phenomenal business leaders, but they are all so committed to this community and Northern Virginia in particular. So, you know, to get back to your question, because we have, and I mentioned, you know, a handful and a half, you know, if I had 3 hours, I could probably list out, you know, 150 to 200 business leaders that are so committed to Northern Virginia, this region, this community, and all of its successes. But I think at the end of the day, you have so many people that care about this region that have phenomenal business acumen that engage their employees in community also. It's not just about, you know, these leaders. It's about, you know, them encouraging their staff to get involved and get engaged. That, I think, again, coupled with who we are and where we're at, you know, in this nation, I truly believe will ensure that this region will continue to grow and prosper.
Well, where do you see Cordia over the next few years in this region? So as we've spent the last 30, 40 minutes talking about, you know, how you got to where you are today, how you are currently thriving or, you know, putting in the steps in place for your future, how do you see Cordia evolving over the next 3 to 5 years? Or what are your goals as a company?
Yeah, so that's a tough question, but let me try to bring it back to Cordia's value statement. Cordia's value statement is CARES, and we kind of follow Cordia CARES, C-A-R-E-S. The C in CARES is community. So where is Cordia? Where am I going to be in 3 to 5 years? At the end of the day, I see myself and our organization continue to devote time and effort to the community. And again, that's the C in CARES. A in CARES stands for advancement. And that's doing everything we can to advance our people, teach our people, advance our organization. And what does that mean? That means growing our organization, not standing still, leaning in. So everything we can do to advance Cordia as an organization. The R stands for respect. And, you know, now, you know, these times more than ever, that pillar of respect is so key. So in the next 3 to 5 years, whatever our organization does will be the highest level or degree of respect, respecting our people, our clients, respecting our community. Again, so important. The E is ethics and integrity. Anything we do today, tomorrow, 5 years out, will be ethical, will have the integrity weaved throughout it. And S is around service. And service means a lot of things, but it means serving our clients. It means serving our stakeholders, serving our community. You know, at the end of the day, as we continue to grow the company today, tomorrow, 3 years out, 5 years out, it is about serving our stakeholder group. So, you know, it's not just about where Cordia will be. You know, Cordia, as long as it and its leaders follow this value statement, that CARES statement, we will all be successful. We will all grow. And we will all be in a position to, you know, to give back to this region where we headquartered our company. You know, I think at the end of the day, that's what's so important here.
Well, Mitch, you know, I've certainly enjoyed you telling your story. I've certainly, you know, enjoyed watching Cordia, and we'll all enjoy continuing to watch Cordia moving forward. It's certainly exciting times for you and the business and everybody else. And no matter what curveballs come our way, we know that you guys all will kind of set the tone for how businesses should deal with it.
Thank you. Thank you.
Cool. Thanks for coming on.
All right, guys. Appreciate it. Have a wonderful day.
Thanks, Mitch. Thank you for tuning in. You can listen to this episode and subscribe to future episodes on Spotify or Apple Podcasts. If you enjoyed this episode, be sure to give us that 5-star review so that we can get our podcast out to more and more listeners. If you are a business leader or know of any business leaders that you would like to nominate to be a guest on the show, please visit us at thenovabusinesspodcast.com.